Firing a penalty, the last play of the game. And a memorable season opener for both teams. Three-man rush. Mangum, all kinds of time. Steps into the throw, in the wind, down to the goal line, and caught! Touchdown, BYU! Mitch Matthews on the last play of the game!
It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast. I am your host, Adam Mangum. It is appropriate that we have our 200th episode to celebrate one of the most dramatic wins in BYU football history. First up, I get to talk with the man himself, BYU receiver Mitch Matthews. He tells us how it all went down, and then we talk about the upcoming matchup with Boise State. Matt and I then recap Nebraska, we preview the Boise State game, and we talk about expectations for the team with Tanner Mangum at the helm. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast. Get all your Cougar news at CougarFan.com and listen to us yap after this. Welcoming to the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast, Hero of the Week, Mitch Matthews. Mitch, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
So 48 hours later, we're recording this on Monday afternoon. How many times have people made you relive the last play of the game?
Yeah, everyone you talk to wants to talk about the game, and, you know, we love it. You know, now 48 hours after the game, you want to focus on Boise State, but the fans just keep wanting to talk about the game, and that's great and all, but it's time to focus on Boise State.
Yeah, we'll get to Boise State, but I'm gonna make you relive it at least one more time. Has it sunk in? You know, some of those historic plays in BYU history, back to Harleen, Jim McMahon's pass at the end of the Miracle Bowl. I mean, these kind of plays are really rare. Have you ever had a Hail Mary successfully completed in a game like this before?
I never have, no. Trust me, it was really fun, and it was a great experience. You know, your family's in the crowd, and your brother's on the sideline with you, and you just want to win for these guys. And it was really fun to be there. It was exciting. It was emotional, and I loved every second of it.
Yeah, it was great to watch. So why, as we watched that play, were you the target? Was Tanner always, was that designed to draw the defense back to the corner, Kurtz and Hoke, and for them to follow them and you to go to the goal line? Or was it just kind of him throw it up and whoever happens to be there gets the chance to grab it?
Yeah, I just throw it up. Okay. The purpose of it is for me to be at the front of the end zone, Tanner to be in the middle, and Nick to protect the back and just go get the football, whoever's throwing it to him. There's heavy wind, so the ball ended up being a little bit shorter than we thought. But that's my job, to be there in the front to get the thing.
Yeah. It's like you were boxing out there. So last year when Taysom got hurt in the Utah State game, it seemed like just took the wind out of everybody's sails, and both defense and offense seemed a little sluggish for the next quarter and a half or so. This time, the first half, Taysom goes out, Tanner comes in for a few plays, everybody seems... the energy's up. Taysom goes out the second time. Tanner comes in. You don't see any major drop-off. What was the difference between this year and last year?
You know, this year, you didn't really know what had happened. Last year, you knew the second he came off the sideline that his leg was broken. So you just kind of, you accepted it then. In this game, it was kind of unsure, you know, is he hurt, is he not? So I was slight of a bit of a distraction, you know, especially for a guy like me. He's one of my best friends, and you worry about the guy, but he wants something more for the team to win. So we went out and we won for him. And, you know, we still don't know the exact injury, the exact diagnosis of the whole thing, but we're playing for the guy and we want the best for him, but he wants us to win. So that's what we're going to do for him.
Yeah. It was, some of the photos and stuff you saw afterwards were awesome. I know you guys are, you're close friends with Taysom. What, as you look forward to Boise State, obviously Tanner Mangum is the guy going forward here. What can you tell us from what you've seen in fall camp and, of course, the place he was in against Nebraska? What can you tell us about Tanner? What kind of quarterback is he? And what should we expect as people that watch the team?
Tanner Mangum is very, very good. He's athletic. He's faster than people think. He's very poised in the pocket. He loves football. He loves to win. He has a very, very good arm, very strong arm, very accurate arm. And he will be a guy that will be a great tier at BYU if he stays the course that he's on. And I know the guy personally really well, and I know that he will. He'll be really good here, and he'll make a lot of people, a lot of BYU fans happy, and he'll make a lot of coaches happy wherever he goes at this level and the next. And he'll do great things, a great player, a great guy, and he'll lead this team this year and years to come to a lot of victories.
Yeah. I mean, obviously a tremendous start to his career with that game. With Boise State, as you guys prepare for them, obviously it's a team you've played for several years in a row. Both teams know each other, though there's been some coaching changes for them during this series with Boise State. What do you expect from their defense, and what do you expect to see from them on Saturday?
They're a style of defense. They're always going to be tough. They're going to run the football. They're going to be really good. I don't know too much about their offense because I just focus on defense. they're coached really well. They're disciplined, and they have a lot of returning defensive backs. They're pretty good. So we're excited to face them and show what we can do at home and redeem ourselves from last year.
Yeah, absolutely. And give Tanner a chance to prepare as a starter, too. So folks have been calling you and Nick Kurtz the Twin Towers. Obviously, he had, as fans and people that follow the team, we hadn't been able to see what he could do. We got to see it definitely on Saturday. What is it like having, have you ever seen anything like this with two, I guess you have three wide receivers that are over 6'4". Ever seen anything like this? And what kind of trouble does that give defenses to guard you guys?
It just puts a lot of focus on, us and outside receivers. It puts a lot of focus on the deep ball and the fade, and they need to prepare for it. They have to spend lots of time preparing for that type of game. They have to prepare for the jump ball and the fade, and that's something that we're really good at. And at the same time, we have a lot of guys that are really quick and shifty that can move. So we make the defense spread thin, and we have lots of options of where we can throw the ball because of our height.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you ever feel bad for the 5'8 guy guarding you, or you just that's what it is?
Yeah, we roll with what comes. This last game, there's very big defensive backs, and we had to roll with what we had, and they're very good defensively, and we luckily came down with some good plays, and we were able to move the ball. But whatever DB comes at you, you roll with it and you plan accordingly.
So have you guys given your wide receiver mate Hoke any crap for hugging the ref at the end, or have you seen
that yet?
Oh, of course,
yeah. I wish I would have saw it live, but just the video was hilarious. Terrence's a funny guy, and so he kind of would do something like that, something like you expect out of him. He's just a goofball and a lot of fun, lots of energy, and he loves to win, so the emotions just got him right there, and it was well worth it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great moment. So we'll get you out on the most serious question I'm going to ask you during the interview, Mitch, which is, what is your favorite movie from this summer?
There was a good movie called The Longest Ride.
The Longest Ride, yeah.
It was a country movie. I'm not really into country music or anything, but it was a love movie, or a romance movie about a cowboy falling in love with a city girl, and they make their life work together. I know it's sappy of me, but it was really good. So, it was good. I didn't cry. I almost cried at one part, but it was really good. It was a good little story, and it was fun. I liked it.
Good. I assume, I can't remember, Mitch. Are you married? Do you have a girlfriend?
No.
Neither. And you went to that movie. Wow.
Yeah.
You just made yourself the most eligible bachelor on campus, I think, with this with this interview. So.
Oh, gosh.
Well, that and, of course, the catch on Saturday as well. So, well, Mitch, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. We really appreciate it, and we look forward to seeing you and the Cougars Saturday night against Boise State.
Okay, I'm excited. Thanks, man.
Last play of the game. Snap, Tanner. Back pedal, sprint out to the right. Got time, loads up, launches it, goes for the end zone. The ball's in the air, it drops at the goal line. I think he caught it for a touchdown. He got it! He got it! He got it! Touchdown, Mitch Matthews! The Cougars win it!
CougarFan.com, Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 200.
There it is. 200s.
Yeah, we're in the 200s. I don't know what that means, but it means we've been podcasting for a while.
Yep.
Almost 5 years.
We've done this 200 times.
200 times. And what better way to go out on a 200 with you guys, listeners, just heard Mitch Matthews talk about both the Nebraska game and then the upcoming Boise State game, which, of course, you and I, Matt, will do. But, you know, after such an awesome finish, which we'll get to in a minute, but Matt, I wanted to ask you a question first. If you had to golf for your life, what are the chances that you would survive those 18 holes? If getting par, heck, let's say getting 10 over par meant your life or death.
18 holes?
18 holes, 10 over.
I'm a dead man.
Me too. Me too. I golf today.
And it's not even close. I'm awful.
I'm
pretty terrible at golf.
I am as well, and it was a charity golf tournament, and it's a scramble, which was a good thing, because I think over 18 holes, we used like 5 of my shots.
So, as you know, I've had back problems.
Yes, yes,
so
you have.
I don't like driving. I don't like driving. It just, it makes me nervous. I don't like hitting off the tee.
Yes, I don't either, and though I have had some back problems, not as bad as you, I don't like it mainly because I look like a 7-year-old swinging a club.
Right, so the back is really just my excuse to avoid what you just described. So a guy that I know works for another company, I've golfed with him a couple of times, he calls me about six, seven weeks ago, and he says, hey, I need a guy to round out a foursome for a charity golf event coming up in October, and I was wondering if you'd be interested in playing. And I said, so essentially, you want somebody who's going to not drive off the tee so that it's a best ball scramble, right?
Yeah.
So that somebody else can take 2 shots off the tee. If that's what you're looking for, I'm your man. And he said, yep, I am looking for that kind of a ringer. Are you in?
And you're in.
Oh, of course I am.
Yeah, yeah, I had...
I'd still rather go golfing than go to the office.
Oh, well, yes. And today I was on a beautiful TPC course here in Blaine, Minnesota, and it was a beautiful day. A great day for golf, if you can golf, which I can't. Topped the ball quite frequently. Cleared the women's tees with my drives on occasion.
Excellent. Good work.
I believe I hit...
Step in the right direction.
I hit 2 of 18 fairways. Now, my short game is actually okay. I'm an okay putter, maybe average. And with my pitching wedge, I'm not always bad.
Yeah, I can chip and putt.
I can sometimes chip and sometimes putt, but it's one of those things where I wish I was better, but I also have never dedicated the time to get better, so it makes sense that I'm still terrible. Right?
It sounds about right.
Yeah, all right. Well,
it's not an easy game.
It is not an easy game. It's not an easy game, and I always get frustrated around the 15th hole that I'm terrible. But what are you going to do? What are you going to do? So, Matt, let's go from how terrible we are at golf to how good we are talking about Cougars in the news.
Cougars in the news!
BYU women's soccer lost their first game of the season 1-0 at number 2 Stanford. I have to say, this is not unexpected. Stanford is quite good, but actually losing 1-0 on the road to number 2 Stanford still makes me think this is a top 10 team and a potential tournament run waiting to happen, Matt.
Yeah, this is a great team. They had a great run even leading up to this game. That's a loss that you can... I mean, you can't win them all.
No, you cannot.
And and as you said, the trees are very good at soccer.
Yes, they are good.
But I think we have a really solid team here that will make a run.
Yes, unfortunately, the Stanford goal in the 32nd minute ended the BYU shutout streak, because they had been winning 2-0 in 4 straight games, and Rachel Boaz had 388 consecutive scoreless minutes to begin her Cougar career.
Wow.
She had 5 saves on Monday night. Great game, and in a loss, unfortunately, for for her. Staying with some of the BYU women's sports, the volleyball team, Matt, won three matches, swept three sets in a row in all of them against St. Louis, a ranked Purdue team, not to be ranked much longer, and Arkansas Pine Bluff. So they roll their only loss so far on the road to USC. So
pretty, that's another solid team. And they won those games. They won those in convincing fashion.
Yes, yes, they are rolling. They are looking good. And, you know, we talked with Jerem Jordan a while ago about this, and they may be a team that, as good as a run they had last year, they may be just as good this year. In our Cougars in the NFL edition, Wani Unga has made the Giants roster, and Alani Fua has made the Cardinals roster, Matt. So congratulations to those former Cougars on sticking with some NFL teams.
And not real shockers there, right? I mean, no. We'd known going through the preseason that Unga was doing very well in New York. And I think we've kind of thought all along that Fua was a guy that could stick.
Yes, yes. I was shocked he didn't get drafted. I'm not shocked that he's making a roster. But let's turn the clock back, Matt. Unga, Fua, Ziggy Ansah, Kyle Vannoy. Four linebackers who all played at least somewhat together. There's a reason our defense was so good for a few years.
Yeah.
With those guys in there.
That's some real talent.
Yeah, highly talented. So, Matt, let's step out of that and talk about, well, we're going to talk about what to call it here in a minute, but right now we'll call it a last-second victory over the Nebraska Cornhuskers. So, Matt, question for you. Did you celebrate more after the initial catch or after the referee said, upon review, the call in the field stood?
For me, it was definitely right after the catch because it was pretty clear from the angle on TV, it was clearly a touchdown.
Yes.
There was no question in my mind. I wasn't even nervous while they were reviewing it.
I was when they showed the second replay, I was no longer nervous. Live, you know, and we're all jumping around and screaming. I'm like, did I see what I thought I saw? And the answer was yes.
Yeah, but he came down on a defender. No part of his body other than his feet touched the ground until he was a body length into the end zone.
Yeah, yeah. So Matt, on a scale of Riley Nelson to Ty Detmer, how big was your celebration?
It was Ty Detmer size. It was Beck to Harleen-esque.
Yes,
the celebration that ensued. You know, when we watched the Beck to Harleen game, I was watching that game with our nephew, and he actually jumped off of the couch high enough that he hit his head on the ceiling in the room where we were watching the game. I didn't hit my head when I jumped, but I'm also a lot older than he was, maybe not as spry. But I jumped. My 10-year-old jumped. We were screaming and yelling. It was really – that was fun.
Yeah, we had a couple other families here. The TV room was packed, and we were jumping and screaming like crazy people, high-fiving, hugging. And then after the replay was confirmed, I may or may not have dove to the ground, Matt, and just out of celebration.
Were you doing snow angels on the carpet?
I might have been. I was pretty stoked because I had now if we go back through the train of events, Matt, I pretty much I'd given up. Right, even when we got the ball back, I'm like, there's not really much of a chance here. Taysom Tanner runs for the first down. All of a sudden, you're like, oh, maybe. But Hail Marys do not work typically, right? They're one in 100 kind of things. There's a couple of these a year in college football, and that's it.
But if you look at the way this one played out, right? And of course, it doesn't hurt to have three guys that are 6'5".
It does not.
But you have or taller. But you have two receivers take the bulk of the defense into the back of the end zone, and then with Matthews coming from the other side, he gets out in front of a man. And that ball's thrown to the front of the end zone. I mean, when the ball was coming down, then the sea of red had to kind of converge on him.
Yes.
But the way it panned out, I mean, you couldn't have drawn it up any better.
No, and you don't have the benefit, but the listeners do, of the interview with Mitch Matthews, that isn't how they drew it up. And that's not exactly where the ball was supposed to be, but obviously it was perfect.
You hear Tanner say that it was underthrown, right? Yes. So you know it's supposed to be somewhere else.
Yes, it was supposed to be with those guys in the back, with Matthews kind of the guy in the front, just in case it's underthrown. So good positioning for everybody, Matt. I don't know if you watched any of the post-game, but of course Mark May said dumb things, including that he just absolutely bashed the Nebraska players for not batting the ball down. As usual, I don't think Mark May actually watched the play because they didn't have the opportunity to bat the ball down.
They were not in position to do so.
So if you want to criticize their position, that's fine. Say somebody should have been in front of Mitch Matthews, and that may be relevant. The problem is, and Mike Riley said it afterwards, and some other people, analysts said it afterwards, it's really easy to say these things in a studio. It's a lot harder to actually do them when how many times do you defend one of these plays a year? Not very many. And
couple
times a year. And most of the times the throw's going to be somewhere in the back of the end zone where you're all standing around each other and you jump.
And on defense, you've got numbers in that situation in almost every scenario.
Yes. Yes. In almost every scenario. In this case, they didn't exactly have it. Well, Matt, let's go to the tweet bag here.
Tweet bag.
That was a little delayed there, buddy.
I was a little slow on the trigger. I'm sorry. I gotta get back on my game.
You do. So at Shy Kurt Vlogs on Twitter asks, do you have to call it a Heck Mary instead of a Hail Mary? It's not a Hell Mary, right?
It is not like an accent, a Southern accent. Hail Mary!
Hail Mary!
Hail no! No, that's not what it is. It's actually a Hail Mary.
Yes. So Matt, what do we call this game? You know, it's become the Beck to Harleen. There's the Miracle Bowl throw from Jim McMahon. What do you call this? I have been calling it the Mangum to Matthews Miracle. Other people are calling it the Miracle at Memorial. Do we have to give it a name? Do you want to give it a name?
I feel like we should just call it the Beck to Harleen. Why can't we just call this the Mangum to Matthews?
Well, what happens if they have two of them?
Well, then the other one will get a special, special name on it, and I hope that they do have two of them.
Yeah, not likely. So Matt, let's jump into some analysis here, which we do on occasion. Three takeaways from the game. You go first. I'll go second. We'll rotate. First takeaway, Matt.
I think we've all got wrapped up in the loss of Taysom Hill in this game. But one thing that I think that, at least initially, that we all kind of lost sight of was the impact of losing to Aloma when we did.
Yes.
But my takeaway from the game was that the defense eventually adjusted to what the offense was doing with him out of the game and was able to get back into form and shutting down the run. And I think that is very important to see if we're going to be, if we are going to expect to adapt to and compete as teams adjust to what we're doing in any given situation.
Okay, good takeaway. My first takeaway is Tanner Mangum. We all hoped we would only see him in garbage time this year. He steps in the first half when Taysom was first injured. Looked sharp. I mean, it's a couple of plays, though. I mean, I wasn't exactly giving him the Heisman yet. That would come in the second half. but his poise and his moving in the pocket, I mean, he is what has been advertised, at least so far. And he's a freshman. He's going to make some mistakes this year. And probably a handful, and I bet you at least once he probably costs us a game. That's just how it is typically with freshman quarterbacks. But that being said, there have been Johnny Manziel, Jameis Winston, and others who have come in and either as redshirt or true freshman made significant impacts and been pretty good. So mine is, when we talked about if Taysom gets hurt, this season is hosed. I don't feel it's quite as hosed as I did a week ago. So takeaway number two, Matt.
Takeaway number two, you and I had a lot of discussion about this receiving core. How deep are they? Are they elite? And all these things have been tossed around. Which of these guys is going to step up? You know, is this going to be what we were calling before? You know, is it going to be Hill and Matthews? But my takeaway here is Nick Kurtz is the man.
Yes.
And I think he's going to rack up a ton of yardage this year.
Yes. Wait a second. If only one of the hosts of this podcast had said he would lead the team in catches and yards.
Oh, geez. See, I hesitated to even bring this up because you're going to be like, look at me. I was right. But yeah. Nick Kurtz with 5 catches for 123 yards, that's a great day.
That's an awesome day.
And I think he can still do that with either one of these quarterbacks.
Yes. Yes. Agreed.
And so my takeaway is Nick Kurtz is going to put up numbers all season long.
All right. My takeaway number two is about the linebackers, Matt. They still look like they don't know what they're doing. Out of position sometimes, and then on other plays, making fantastic athletic plays. Longy is fast. Seems faster than last year. I don't know if that's true or if there was just a couple of plays where he got to do that. Warner looked good except when he looked bad. So I'm still a little worried about this linebacker core. I know they're young. I know they're inexperienced, relatively speaking. But at some point, Warner and Longy have to become the linebackers that we all thought they were going to be or not. And this is the year, quite frankly, where we really need them to step up. And in the first half, and even parts of the second half, they kind of did not do that. But it's game one. Takeaway number three, Matt, for you.
Takeaway number three for me is kind of a similar sentiment about the defensive backfield. I think there were some great flashes in there. I think that Hanneman's interception is an example of that. There were some good plays in there, but there were some points where you saw a little bit of the flashes of the classic issues with defensive backfields that we've had in the past. You know, a little too much space, slow when the receiver breaks out of the route on comeback routes and out routes and these types of things. But part of that does go along with this philosophy of, you know, bend and don't break.
Yeah.
And there's a piece of every fan that gets nervous when they see that played out on the football field. So for me, the takeaway is that the jury is still out on that group.
Yeah,
I'm not sold yet.
Hanneman's a great example because you said, you know, he made – I mean, it was a fantastic interception. I mean, athletic is all get out. And yet he also made some terrible decisions in pass coverage that led to some big plays where he was biting on the wide receiver screen when that wasn't his responsibility, right? When he wasn't even guarding that zone or that man, and then he lets the guy run past him. So – But Hanneman, I mean, it's his first game, right? So as the starter, so we'll, man, that the, if he can make a couple of interceptions like that throughout the year, that'll cover up for some mistakes.
Well, absolutely, and especially in that type of a scenario, in that place in the game, if he can make a play, then you can negate some of those other mistakes.
Yep,
absolutely.
Yep. So my last one, I'm going to borrow a tweet bag question from the Irish Mexican that's at Bullishism on Twitter.
Twitter? Really? What kind of?
It's a new social media.
Social media is this?
Yes, I just created it. We're going IPO.
Wow.
So he says, perhaps the unsung heroes of the day. How important was the O-line's improvement to winning that game? I thought the offensive line really started to gel throughout the game. We'll get to the running game in a bit. We're going to really kind of break that down, Matt, and talk about that here in a few minutes. But I would say the offensive line, I'll give them a B+ to A-. Their pass protection, for the most part, was great. 3 sacks allowed, but only for 11 yards. And one of those sacks was a just all-out rush. And another sack, I'm going to actually put on Taysom, because he, on a fourth down call, fourth down play, you got to throw the football.
Yeah.
you just have to. On fourth down, you have to throw it because it's a fourth down. There's no reason to get sacked back there. So anyway,
Matt, one other thing I want to say real quick about the offensive line is they started very early rotating guys through, right?
Yes.
And there were a couple combinations in there early in the game that didn't gel as well. But I felt like as the game went on, you got to a point where they were rotating guys in and out of there without losing a step. And that's going to be really important if they're really going to try and run a fast-paced offense. And if you want big, mean, nasty offensive linemen, you got to have them in there. You got to have them fresh. You got to have them hitting people. You got to have them hitting different people. You got to have them moving around. So I like what they're doing there with the offensive line. And that was exciting to see. I just love to see offensive linemen mess people up.
Yeah,
that's the
yeah.
best.
Well, let's talk about that fast thing, Matt, because they ran 72 plays as an offense this week, which is kind of on par with the 2011 and 2012 teams, significantly below the last 2 years. Is this a change in philosophy, or was this just a game that the pace was just slower for various reasons?
I feel like there were times in the past couple of seasons where it was, we're going to go fast for going fast's sake.
Yes.
Right? This go fast, go hard thing. And as we've seen in the past, that can lead to mistakes. It can lead to bad reads. It can lead to receivers and quarterback not being on the same page. It can lead to false starts. It can lead to a variety of those kinds of issues. But when you look at this game, the penalties are way down. The pass blocking, as you talked about, was pretty good,
yes.
which is an issue when you're trying to go fast and go hard.
Yep.
So you solve a couple of those problems, and I feel like that's directly related to the number of plays they ran on offense. And I will take fewer plays on offense. I will go ahead and trade that for less penalties and fresh legs for pass blocking. Yeah. I'll trade those.
Yeah, absolutely. So, Matt, where does this finish among BYU's best ending of games? Not all-time games, because I don't think it... we'll get to that in a second, but is this better than Beck to Harleen? Is this better than the Miracle Bowl? Where does this fit?
You know, I don't know if it's better than the Miracle Bowl. I mean, that's... I mean, come on, right? I mean, that's college football legend, even outside of Provo.
Yeah, and the problem with comparing it to the Miracle Bowl, obviously we're talking about two Hail Mary last-second passes, and by the way, a heck of a throw by Jim McMahon in that particular game. The reason that game is one of the best college football games ever is because of the comeback, right? BYU was never down in this game against Nebraska like they were against, and that SMU team was filled with players that were being paid, and would go on to be paid.
It was a roster full of professionals.
Yeah, a roster full of professionals who would go on to be professionals again in the NFL. So,
one of whom was your favorite player for a long time, I believe.
Craig James?
Wasn't Eric Dickerson on that team?
Yeah, Eric Dickerson was on that team. Craig James, I'm just joking. I couldn't stand
you
Craig
You love
James.
Craig James. Don't
oh,
give
my
me that.
Gosh.
You
he
love
was,
him.
He was Mark May before Mark May was Mark May.
What's wrong with Mark May?
He's terrible.
Come on, man. Just relax.
Terrible. No, he's terrible. He shouldn't have a job announcing games or being in a studio. He doesn't say anything interesting. He doesn't say anything that makes me think he even understands football very well. And he's still there. I don't know. I don't get it. There are talented, good people out there. Give him a shot, ESPN, and get that doofus off. That's all
you
I have
just
to
called
say
Mark
that.
May a doofus.
Yeah, come on, Mark May.
you said doofus on the podcast.
What are you going to do about it, Mark May? Tell me that I should bat the ball down even though it's clear you didn't see it. And I love it when he's totally wrong. They show him the replay, and whoever's there in the studio points out that he's wrong, and then he just pretends that that isn't what happened. I mean, that's a good way to analyze stuff. So, Matt, if you had one game ball to give to one player or unit on the offense and defense, who would those game balls go to?
So I think that on the offense, and this is kind of the cliche thing to do here.
But that's your captain cliche, so that fits.
I really am, though. But I think you give the game ball in this situation to Taysom Hill. A guy goes into the locker room, is told that he's got a season-ending injury, and his response is, well, let's tape it up. Put some tape on it, and I'm going to go back out and give this another go. You know, this is a guy that's dedicated to the team, you know, and there was some conversation on Twitter about this that frankly bothered me a little bit. This idea of, well, that's really selfish. You know, he's going to go in hurt. And this is not Riley Nelson. Okay. This isn't Riley Nelson in a broken back. This is Taysom Hill, who is one of the best football players in the country. you know,
who, by the way, even hurt, was outrunning, even with whatever, you know, the Lisfranc, I believe, is what they're calling it now, outran Nebraska defensive backs.
Yes. This is not the same thing. This isn't a player who decided, me, I want to be in the game, I want to be the hero. This is a player who said, we don't have anybody else who's started a game. The guy behind me hasn't played competitive football in 4 years.
Well, but I'm gonna stop you there just because I'll say this. You know I'm not a huge Riley Nelson fan. I don't think anything he ever did was selfish, okay? I think he believed he was the best person to play. The difference is, as you're pointing out, the level of abilities and also potentially the injury and how it would affect him. The whole thing about the selfish thing, it's up to the coaches to make those kind of calls. The coaches made a mistake with Riley Nelson. Not Riley Nelson. Do you ever want a quarterback who said what? I mean, it's this double standard, right? Cutler. Cutler pulls himself out of a game and everyone's calling him a baby, right? Because he says he's too hurt to go back in. But then when somebody's hurt and they go back in, we all say they're a selfish jerk. I mean, you can't have it both ways. I would rather have the guy say, I want to go back in, coach. It's up to the trainers and the coaches to say, you're not fit to go back in. And in the case of Taysom, as you pointed out, he comes back in and he was still making plays. But I'll tell you what, he looked pretty un-Taysom-like for a good portion of that game after he got hurt, unfortunately.
But I will say this. You know, a guy who took some criticism for pass accuracy and some things last year and in the offseason came in and threw 61%.
Yeah, yeah.
In a game where he played a lot of this game with a messed up foot.
Before he got hurt, it was laser beams and the balls were right where they were supposed to be. So, Matt, game ball for the defense.
Game ball for the defense. See, there's a couple things I want to do here with the defense.
Gracious.
But you know what I'm going to do? Because I'm just so excited about some kind of a pass rush.
Okay.
Longy gets my game ball.
Longy gets your game ball.
For the sack.
Okay. All right.
You know, that was my bold prediction last week was we'd get 2 sacks from the linebackers in this game. We didn't quite get there, but I'm going to give him that for the sack. The pressure on the quarterback was there last week.
All right. All right. My game ball on the offensive side is going to go to Mitch Matthews for that fantastic catch at the end. I mean, he has to catch it with one guy grabbing his arm, another guy hitting him in the back. And he has to catch the football, or we're talking about having a much different conversation today. My defensive game ball is going to go to the defensive line, mainly because they started putting it together. It took them a while, but after Tuiloma went out with the injury, they made some important, they stuffed some runs, they filled their gaps, and I thought with a man down, they did a pretty good job. They did a pretty good job. So Matt, let's talk about Hoke's hug or Riley's high five. Which is the better referee-related celebration?
I think you know where I'm going to land on this. I think you see this coming, but I'm taking Hoke's hug all
Hoke's
day long.
Hoke's hug.
All day.
I love Riley's high five. I think it's one of the coolest celebrations of all time, and came in a game in which Riley was the one making the plays against Utah State. But I'll tell you, Hauk's hug was pretty awesome. And then to read Hauk's quotes that Anai was really ticked off with him makes it even better.
Well, did you see his tweet that anybody who signals touchdown on campus is going to get a hug?
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah. And so the Rock Twitter account was like, oh, we have to make this happen. Everybody, if you see him, you got to put your hands up and take a picture of him giving you a hug.
Oh, my gosh, because I'll tell you what, Matthews in this prior interview said that Hauk was kind of a character and a joker. Some of these players that, you know, aren't the big stars, they don't get a lot of interview time, so you don't get to see their personality, right? We got pretty familiar with Jamal's and Mitch Matthews and Taysom and Vannoy when he was here, you know, but a lot of these guys, you don't realize who they are, and apparently that's just kind of who he is, and it was pretty awesome, so...
Well, and the thing that's great about both of those is that it is just pure excitement, just
yes.
uncontrollably released.
Yes, yes.
And that's really what it is in both situations, and that's fun.
Yes, with that kind of ending, it's fine, and it sounded like the ref was pretty cool about it. So, Matt, moving on from celebrations, my biggest concern, we didn't talk about this in the takeaways because we're going to do a whole segment here on it. I'm going to give you a statement, and you tell me if I am over the line, on the line, or I didn't go far enough. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Here we go. Between Taysom and Tanner, they had almost 100 yards rushing between the two of them. BYU finished with 132 yards rushing. This running game is toast. We're going to have trouble running the ball all year against decent teams because, quite frankly, I'm not sure Anai knows how to use these three guys. And on top of that, they're just not good enough. Am I over the line, on the line, or did I not go far enough?
I feel like you're over the line. And let me take a second. Let me take a second and explain to you where I'm coming from here.
Okay, explain away, buddy.
I don't know that we will face a better combination on defensive line for the rest of the season.
That's very likely.
Okay, so there's Exhibit A. Exhibit B is the offensive line looked pretty good. Okay, so I think we can create some opportunity there. Then the next piece of it is, yes, Taysom's gone. Yes, Jamal's gone. But I think what we can expect to see is some adjustments with how we run the football. I would not be surprised to see some fly sweep type of stuff worked in and some other ways to get the ball into the hands of some of these other guys behind the line of scrimmage. And so I if we can make those things work, you might be able to open up some opportunities to make life a little bit easier, you know, for an Adam Hine or Algie Brown.
Okay, here, my concern is not with the offensive line. It's with the running backs, okay? So I don't have any problem. I think the offensive line, there were holes that occasionally were absolutely and completely missed. Some of them were inexplicable. Algie Brown gets the handoff, and there's a hole, and he cuts away from the hole.
Yeah, he cut the total wrong way, yeah.
And that was, you know, he had how many carries? Three carries, right? He didn't have a lot of carries. Think about this for a second. Running backs total had 11 carries. The quarterbacks had more carries than the running backs. I am really worried about this group. And he doesn't know how to use Carter. We're giving him delayed handoffs. Like, this guy's a speed guy. You got to get him in space, right? You put him in the middle of the line, he disappears. So we'll get that on the preview, Matt, but I'm very worried. But you think I'm over the line. I hope you're right. So, Matt, let's talk about something we don't really want to talk about, which is Taysom Hill, his injury, he's coming back, what's going to happen. Matt, what should Taysom do? If you were his friend and he said, what should I do? Assuming he can rehab from this thing and be ready for spring football, and get a medical redshirt, which I think all of those things are possible with what we know today. We're recording this on Tuesday evening, so with what we've heard about his injury so far, would you tell him to try to come back next year, or is it time after three season-ending injuries and four seasons to hang it up?
Hang it up?
Yeah.
If Taysom Hill's my friend, and he asks me what he should do, I'm going to tell him to play.
But play
if you
what?
Can play, come back. If you can play, come back and play. They'll figure it out. I don't know what they do. I don't know what they do with him, right?
Yeah,
I don't know what happens. But if you're Taysom, if Taysom Hill asked me what I think he should do, you got your whole life. You got your whole life to go do something else.
Mm. Yeah, I'm totally with you. I was playing devil's advocate. So let's jump to the tweet bag, Matt. Todd on Twitter. That's at Todd and D. On Twitter, he is the creator of the Riley Nelson to Ty Detmer scale, by the way. 2016 Taysom. Okay, 2016. Taysom plus Jamal plus Squally equals triple option.
Oh, boy.
What do you think about Taysom? Now, this is assuming that Tanner has a very good season and has the reins of the offense, okay? What do you think about him as a H-back slash running back slash something else? Or do you think if he's healthy, you give him a chance to compete with Tanner for the in spring football for the starting quarterback position?
I think if he's healthy, I give him a chance to compete with Tanner for the starting quarterback position. I also think about playing him on defense.
Defense? No. Yeah. He's the best runner maybe in BYU history. And you're going to put him on defense?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, he's going to light people up.
I have no doubt of that. I just think you're still insane. That's like saying Steve Young should have been playing defensive back.
He started at defensive back?
Yeah.
Well, not started, but that's where he began.
Yeah. Taysom Hill is the best runner we have ever had. He's got to be in the offensive backfield if he's not playing quarterback. I mean, you're my brother. I love you. But what you just said makes absolutely no sense to me.
You've got this, at this point, I mean, you've got a whole, you're all clogged up back there.
Clogged up. Did you see what happened this year? Something happens to Squally. You don't have anybody. I mean, no disrespect to Algie Brown and Adam Hine and Nate Carter. They're not nobody, but you need depth at running back. Man, the three of them back there, what would defensives do? What are they going to do?
They panic.
You put one of them as kind of a, you know, tight end position, you know, H-back kind of thing, and two guys next to Tanner. What do you do with that? You pee in your pants, right? I'm serious. I mean, what do you do with that? If Squally's as good as we think he's going to be, that's pretty fearsome. So Matt, let's move on from our little brotherly disagreement to preview the Boise State game. So, Matt, 16-13 victory for the Broncos over Chris Peterson's Washington Huskies. It was not a pretty game by any stretch of the imagination, but Boise State did not even score in the second half. It kind of came down to them making some defensive stops. So, Matt, what do you think of the Broncos? Has your opinion from preseason changed at all?
You know, my opinion from preseason hasn't changed a bunch. I think this is a good team, but I do overall. I mean, I feel pretty good about our chances here. But if you look at kind of, you know, how they did in that game and how that game shook out, I don't know that I see anything in there that's a real big surprise. So there's nothing there to convince me to feel any differently about this team than I did a week ago.
I'll tell you one thing that I thought is Washington ran the ball 22 times for 29 yards. We just talked about what I think about our running game right now. We're not going to be able to run against Boise State, which means they're going to be able to put their ears back and come after a true freshman quarterback. Now, I did see Stuart Mandel on National College Football writer, say he thinks it's funny that we call a guy that's as 22. Old as Tanner as a 20-year-old as a true freshman who's been out of high school, played against in the Elite 11, you know, with Jameis Winston, who's now, you know, starting quarterback in the NFL. But so I my opinion hasn't changed a lot. It's 1 week. They didn't look great, but I don't think they looked terrible. I think Boise State's still a top 20-25 team. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, probably. You know, and I feel a little bit better looking at what a real freshman quarterback was able to do against that defense.
Yes.
You know, the kid threw what 58% of his passes. Not big yardage numbers.
Right.
And he did throw a pick, but this is a kid who's an actual freshman.
Yeah. Yeah. And he did okay. He did okay. Like you said, it wasn't spectacular, but when you think about the fact that he had no support from the running game, Dwayne Washington was their leading rusher with 8 carries for 14 yards, right? So not on Washington's side. Boise State's offense looked fairly mediocre, but I thought their strength would be in the defense this year anyway. But I'm not sure if our defense is as good as Washington's yet. Time will tell. So, Matt, let's talk about Boise State fans. Matt, have thrown down the gauntlet. You may have seen
this.
Yeah,
they have.
It, as reported on CBSSports.com, and actually Diana Allen on Twitter, at Diana Allen, she points out that some Boise State fans had some fun, climbed up there, and put one of their flags up. Matt, on the pregame throwdown, same scale as always, Riley Nelson and Ty Detmer, where does this sit?
This is up in a tight Etmer range.
No, it's like a John Beck.
I don't think I don't see it as like malicious. I'm not saying that that range has to be malicious.
No,
it's
not, I'm not
throwing
talking about
paint
malicious.
On statues.
I'm not but talking
but this
about
is
malicious.
This is the stuff that legends become made of.
Legends.
You're climbing into the stadium and putting a flag up?
It's pretty awesome. I'm not. John Beck was awesome, wasn't he?
Yeah, okay, that's true. I'll give you that.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Ty Detmer level, I mean, you got to do something a little bigger. And it doesn't have to be malicious. Actually, if it's malicious to me, you know, at
that's
some point
dumb.
It becomes dumb, right? This was actually cool. I mean, it's kind of funny, right? You look up there and there's a Boise State flag flying at LaBelle Edwards Stadium. I thought it was funny.
So is this a rivalry? When fans start doing stuff like this, is that what this is?
Oh, it's a rivalry. We've talked about that, right? A rival. When you play somebody every year and you're both pretty good, rivalries are going to happen. So, Matt, it's time for some predictions, all right? Some predictions for you. Tanner, over-under. We're going to do over-unders first. Tanner, over-under, 270 yards passing.
Over.
I'm going to take the under. BYU running backs, over under 50 yards rushing.
Oh, man. Under.
I'm going to take the over.
Really?
Defensive sacks. We had 3 sacks against Nebraska. Over under 3.5 sacks against the Broncos.
Taking the over there.
I'm gonna
that
take
one's
the
easy.
Under on that.
Really?
One. I'm going to take the under. I think there'll be one long run. I think Nate Carter or Hine, with their speed, will break something and we'll get over 50 yards, but I don't think we're going to have a great running day. I think the offense is going to struggle against Boise State. I think Boise State's defense is good. We both preseason predicted a loss against Boise State this week, Matt. Vegas is, let's see, Vegas is... has got Boise as a 3-point favorite. Are you taking Boise State or BYU with that 3-point line?
I'm taking BYU with a 3-point line.
I'm taking Boise State with the 3-point line. I hate to be Mr. Rain on the Parade.
But you may remember, this was the game where we were assigning percentages, and I said 50-50, and we made me choose one, and I ended up with a 49. This is that game.
This is precisely that game, Matt. So now... what are you predicting?
So I actually feel pretty good about a couple things that I saw last week on both sides of the football. And I'm excited about the way we haven't really talked about this, but special teams looked better than I had expected.
I would agree with that, yes.
And so those types of things are the kinds of things that I thought were going to be the difference in a close game with Boise State. But seeing that some of those things get tightened up, we got Tanner Mangum coming in, but I think the offense regroups and is still remains productive. I think the defense does what they've got to do to slow down the Boise State attack. And I'm going to go ahead and say BYU wins 28-27.
Oh, that's nice. All right. So I'm going to say Tanner Mangum's going to make some mistakes, throw an interception or two. Running game is going to struggle. I think special teams are actually going to be exposed a little bit. Linehan looked better than I thought he would, but he was aided on that 70-something yard punt by a very favorable wind. I think Boise State is a better team, and I think it will be close. I think the Cougars will be in it, but ultimately will fall 24-17 at home to the Broncos. So apparently I hate the Cougars, Matt.
Yeah, why don't you just go ahead and throw a wet towel on that parade?
I did. I'm sorry. After all this excitement. So, Matt, let's quickly, we don't have a lot of time left in the show, at Todd and D, ask us, do we need to repick all of our games the rest of the season, Matt? We do this every week. So, of course, we will. Matt, very quickly, no commentary, just win or loss, UCLA.
Oh, boy. Loss.
Gosh, you also hate the Cougars. I am also going to say loss. UCLA
Listen.
Looked pretty good.
Okay, no commentary. We said I'll be quiet.
Sorry. All right, Michigan, win.
Win.
Yeah, they're terrible. UConn, win.
Win.
All right. East Carolina, win.
Win.
Cincinnati.
Win.
Loss.
Mm.
Wagner, win. That's a joke.
Win.
San Jose State,
that's
win.
A win.
Missouri.
That's a loss.
I'm going to still call it a win. Fresno State.
That's a win.
Utah State. Win.
It's a win. Wow. Have I really flipped like that? Because I was kind of the Debbie Downer before.
No.
Drinking the Kool-Aid.
You weren't the Debbie Downer before. You are predicting a 10-win season. I'm predicting a 9-win season.
Yeah.
So I think they lose 3 games. You think they lose just 2 more games this year. Freshman quarterback, man, I think he drops Cincinnati or maybe East Carolina. One of those games, something just goes off. But all right, so that is the rest of the season. Matt, we are running low on time, but I wanted to we're going to talk about college football. The rankings, by the way, BYU is sitting right outside of the rankings at about 27th in the AP poll. Don't care about the coaches poll. It's dumb. But we're getting some votes, according to collegepolltracker.com. We're as high as 19 on a ballot, and quite a few people have us in the 20s. But Matt, let's talk about other college football teams. Who did you like this weekend that you think made a case to be in that top 4 and you think they're there? And who did you think maybe kind of disappointed and might not make that top 4 that you thought had a chance?
Well, you know, I'm going to go ahead and do those in the reverse.
Okay.
I think a team that I think sent the message to me that they might not belong in the top 4, but I originally thought had a chance was TCU.
I am going to absolutely back that one up. That was also my team that didn't look great. But why do you say that?
Well, I feel like I know maybe Minnesota will be better than advertised, but watching that game, granted, I didn't watch all 4 quarters. I watched more of I feel like I watched more of early parts of that game. I'd go back and think about that Thursday night. Yeah. So I didn't see a team that's going to compete with the Alabamas and the Ohio States.
Yes.
And the Michigan States, frankly.
Yes.
And so I just, you know, I think that I'm going to go ahead and use the word. I think they're overrated.
I think both TCU and Baylor are, I think neither of them make the, there's once again, not a Big 12 representative in the playoff.
Baylor was a close second for me to get this nod as well, because
thought,
they did not look good early.
I thought both of them looked pretty pedestrian. Now, that being said, teams have a bad first week and then bounce back, and we're all laughing about this as TCU rolls the rest of their schedule, right? But based on, you know, overreacting to 1 week, those would be the 2 teams I would pick. Who would you, as somebody that you think solidified or maybe even increased how you feel about them for the Final 4?
Ohio State. How can you, I mean, look at the way they used those weapons, you
Amazing.
Know, and they could next week start a different quarterback.
Yes.
And still put up 50 points on somebody.
Yes.
Now they might, because their next 4 weeks are against ridiculous competition, but the stable of talent they have on that team on the offensive side of the football is insane.
It's amazing.
And if anybody can figure out how to use that talent to create the best situation for those players as individuals. I mean, did you see that Brax Miller, that spin move?
It's
you see him just hit the B button on that guy and he's gone.
Yeah. Yeah. It you're not supposed to be able to do that in actual football. They looked great. And I think Virginia Tech is the top 40 team and they made them look bad. Their defense, I think, is actually decent, but it didn't look like it was decent, did it?
Nope.
It did not look good at all. The team for me, Matt, is actually UCLA. And here's why. So I thought coming in, I thought they're going to be pretty good, but they got a freshman quarterback too, right? And
yep.
You look at that and you say, I don't know if they're going to make it or not. UVA is not a great team. Okay. So I'm not saying that anything great there. 28 of 35 for 351 yards and 3 touchdowns as a true freshman, Josh Rosen.
Crazy.
I am very scared for what UCLA's passing offense will do against the Cougars. But take the Cougars out of this. I think, you know, obviously the Pac-12 is very good. They could get tripped up by a very good team somewhere along the line, you know, and obviously – Oregon is going to have a lot to say as to who ends up in that winning that conference. But I think they're good, and I think UCLA could be in that playoff. So I was impressed. So Matt, the Mangum to, and by the way, can we just put this to bed now? We're not closely related to Tanner Mangum. Okay, I've you been know, asked that question like 80 times.
In church on Sunday before church started, the bishop came over.
Did you bear your testimony about Tanner Mangum?
No, I wanted
Awkward.
To. But the bishop came over before church started, and he said, "I know everybody's asking you because we had already received some texts." I know everybody's asking if you're related to Tanner Mangum, and I understand that you're not. Would you like me to just make an announcement from the pulpit so everybody can stop asking me? And I said, actually, Bishop, I'm going to start telling people that we are related because that's way more fun. So you, no need to make the announcement. But we're not related. We're not. Not in any meaningful way.
Somewhere back with polygamous wives or whatever. I don't know.
Something crazy.
But we're not. And I'm not going to make the joke. Well, I am going to make it because obviously I set this up. But you know, I always said, you know, he came from the athletic side of the Mangums, and that you're going to get all huffy and puffy about me making that joke because you actually were a good athlete in high school. But I was not. So.
Listen, I was a decent athlete in high school. I was not on the realm of whatever genes it is that Tanner
has
picked up.
Yes, amen and hallelujah to that. So, Matt, it's awesome to have a game to talk about. It's awesome that we're playing Boise State. I hope I'm wrong in my prediction, obviously, and I hope you're right. But Boise State's good. This is going to be a good game, and I assume this is a dumb question. You will be staying up to watch all of that game.
Yeah.
That's a dumb question. All right. So thank you everybody for downloading and listening. We are grateful that you decided to spend some time with us this week talking about such a wonderful, wonderful ending. I'm sure all of you celebrated like crazy people, just like we did. Thanks for downloading. Thanks for listening. Check us out on iTunes. Check us out on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout. Get all your Cougar news at CougarFan.com, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars!